Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer, and my boss.
Hello. I'm going to say hello. That's all right. All I got.
He's a man of many words, that T.C. Today, we're going to be talking about self-monitoring, but before that, to my left is Will Patati Hottie Schmidt.
Hi.
How are you?
Patati Hottie?
Uh-huh.
He got
Hottie.
Totally turned around.
Yeah,
it took
yeah.
you 63 episodes to get your name turned yeah. around to
She's
advance
pretty
to
good
the next
on that.
Level.
Yeah, she's pretty focused.
Yeah, yeah. I'm focused today.
So congratulations.
Uh-huh. And Will is a trainer and, a health care practitioner and trainer to Hollywood stars and the elite.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Fancy people.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won't even see me.
All right. You're not fancy enough.
I'm not fancy enough. Wait till I get
How many
series.
Grammys uh-huh. do you have?
Oh.
Is it 2 Grammy minimum?
Yeah, okay. All right. So like I said, today we're going to be talking about self-testing, running those self-tests on yourself. And if you haven't liked us yet or followed us on Facebook at Kick It In The Nuts, you better pull over, stop whatever you're doing, drop that piece of pizza, and go to Facebook to Kick It In The Nuts. That's where we're going to be posting our questions every Sunday, and you guys can weigh in and ask your questions about the topics that we post. And I'm just all over the map today. My brain is going crazy.
They can request topics, too, if you guys want
to
talk
about okay.
stuff.
Yeah, because we're going to run out of topics next week. We have one topic
exactly.
left.
And then what if I have 12 fingers?
Yeah, we would definitely use that as a topic. But next week's topic is clowns.
So okay. if you want something better than that,
yeah. So if you want something better than clowns
digestion,
then you'll need to give different. Us some new topics.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but we're like, what'd you say, 63 podcasts now. We're running out of elements, so uh-huh. think of those elements for us and send them in.
They're making up new elements every day, so mm-hmm. yeah. we'll have some new ones by right. next week.
Exactly. Just check that out. So what do you guys have to say about self-testing?
Well, I think the reason that we wanted to do this show was not just about the self-test that we teach, but to help people understand that you're allowed to monitor things at home to get an idea of, hey, what's going on? How's my health? How's my body working?
I'm self-testing myself right now. I'm seeing how long I can go without blinking.
That's a self-test. Mm-hmm. Yep. That counts.
How long you can stay at the sun?
Shoot. I just
careful.
Blinked. Yeah.
Right. But if you monitor that and you keep it on a graph, then it will probably mean nothing.
You
nothing
won't
that
be able
I know
to
about,
see the graph soon.
Exactly. It'll be something that goes back to digestion.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, that when we see clients, we're like, you know, hey, how is this? What is your blood pressure? And they're like, well, when I was at the doctor 6 years ago, right. he said it was pretty.
I don't have high blood, right.
Yeah.
But times, they are changing in very exciting ways. And
one of the exciting ways is that people no longer say times they are changing.
Right.
I don't know if you knew about
bringing that.
That
yeah, sorry about that. It's a throwback back. Wednesday. But the thing is, like, the ability to monitor your own body chemistry is getting easier and easier and fancier and fancier
right.
by the like second.
Yeah, like they have an app for that.
Look, pretty soon we're not even going to have doctors.
Like you want to resequence your genome? There's an app
yeah.
for that. You know, it's like it's
right. go in your office and yeah.
And like what's coming up soon, have you heard of like the XPRIZE, what they do with that? So they create this to solve world grand challenges like hunger or climate change or things like that. The first one was to create a commercial space flight, which they did with the $10 million prize. And then they've got another one going right now, which like 4 teams are well into the competition. They're going to do it. But do you remember in Star Trek when like Bones would like scan the person to see like what was wrong with them?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, if you ever watch Star Trek, like us nerds, you'd know like he could just scan you with a little thing and be like, oh, you've got a tumor in your ear and you've got like hemophilia, you know, and then he'd cure it also at the same time. But they're coming up with a device where you'll be able to pretty much completely cut out the whole going to the doctor, running lab tests, waiting for them to come back, and just scan your own spit or blood or breath. Wow. And it'll be able to, within like minutes or maybe eventually seconds, diagnose you and advise you of like what you should do.
I'm dying in 25 minutes.
Right. Ooh. So it can tell you like, oh, your kid's just got a little cold, or take him to the doctor right now. Like it'll be able to, like, with greater accuracy than doctors. So that's coming. But what's also like, important to know about, like, when that level of sort of analysis comes from, you still got to pay attention to who you're asking for advice, like, because
right.
they're going to be
those numbers are going to mean different things to different people.
Yeah, and if you're asking a program that's been programmed by like allopathic medicine, yeah, they're like, oh, you need this drug. Right. Your high blood pressure or low blood pressure is not necessarily going to give you the holistic answer, and if that's what you're looking for. But the thing is, it will be able to tell you an amazing spectrum of information, which you can already gather a lot of great stuff, which we're going to talk about today, in self-tests that are available very cheaply and easily. But you'll still want to know how to interpret all that stuff. So we'll talk about
people
that.
Do big things in this world. My goal is just to make sure that I get up and he doesn't kill me and get to the gym.
Uh-huh.
And people are like, you know, making it's things a good that goal. Can tell you it's about cool. disease.
So what was the name of the project that does those kind of
X-Prize.
Big things?
X-Prize.
X-Prize.
Yeah. Part of the X-Files.
We should start one just to see if we can find a solution to get kids to wear pants that fit.
Yeah.
That's a world problem.
You can do smaller prizes if you go to herox.com. They're like smaller challenges. But
okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Cool. That seems like a big one to me.
Yeah. You know, and as much as I hate self-testing, but just because it's one more thing to remember to do, you know, it does help you, because I know that sometimes like things may be shifting and I'm not aware of it yet because I'm not feeling it yet. So I don't know, and if I don't test, then I don't know. Oh, wow, okay, because you can't feel if my saliva pH is, you know, where it's supposed to be or whatever. But I'm like, okay, then that's great. I've never been that good before, so I'm doing something right. Keep going in that direction,
yeah.
You know?
So, and let's back up a little bit first. So what a lot of people don't know is that even that it's a bit, they have the ability to look at anything. They walk right past, you know, the blood pressure cuffs at every single pharmacy in the country, and they don't understand, they don't put that together that, oh, I can just buy one of those. It's $49 and I can have that at my house.
Yeah, those are for sale.
Right, yeah. It's not just for show. So let's talk about some of the things that are super easy for people to look at, and then let's just get into a little bit why they would want to look at that. What does that mean when they see those measurements? What can they gain from that information? So I think the most important one is blood pressure, because, you know, when we look to help somebody, the first thing we want to look at is their electrolyte status, and is it way too high and causing all kinds of problems, or is it way too low and causing all kinds of problems? So this is something that can answer a lot of questions that a lot of people have had their whole life. You know, why do I cry the second week in every month for no reason? You know, those are kind of things that
period.
You can figure out. Right. But it really could be that. Mm-hmm. But if they knew what their blood pressure was, they could make adjustments and maybe they wouldn't cry so much. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what information somebody can gain by looking at their blood pressure. What kind of range do they want to see it in? And when it's out of that range, what kind of information can they gather?
Yeah. So ideally, it's your blood pressure has two numbers. The top number is called the systolic, which is like the pressure inside the circulatory system when the heart just beat. So like it's like when the wave is like coming in, so there's more pressure. And then there's the diastolic, which is in between beats, which is like the standing pressure. And you want it to be somewhere close to around 120 over 80 is ideal. And too low... And when people have low blood pressure, they almost never know it, because the doctors just say, oh, good. It's
good
not,
job.
It's not high. Mm-hmm. So they could be walking around with like an 89 over 6.
Right.
I had one doctor tell me that because I'm short and stuff, that it's good for me to have low blood pressure, that I wouldn't have normal blood pressure because I'm smaller.
Uh-huh.
Well, but their goal is, well, hey, you're not going to have a heart attack. You get a gold star. Good job.
Right.
But the problem is that a lot of issues come from low blood pressure that we've talked on a lot of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of number would somebody see and they could understand, oh, that's too low?
Sure. If it was under 113 over 73, like either one of those numbers beneath that, we'd say that's too low. And we use a term called electrolyte deficient to classify, like, oh, like your body is electrolyte deficient, and that's one of the primary markers we use to detect that.
Right, and when we do most of the tests that we do on ourselves or have people do, we're looking to do that test at least 2 hours after a person eats. Now, there's some other tests that someone might do the first thing when they wake up and stuff like that, but the general idea is that when you eat, your body, like, goes to war. There's like a battle going on. There's like they have to destroy this food and break it down. It's a huge job. So you don't want to see what your numbers are while your body's freaking out doing this major overhaul. You want to see what the numbers are when it's at its normal functioning state. So we like to see people run tests at least 2 hours after a meal, and then you can get an idea what's going on. Because someone could check blood pressure right after they have an ice cream cone, and their blood pressure could be great because of all the sugar in there would have lifted that blood pressure a little bit. And then 2 hours later, they're at 89 over 60.
Right. What if somebody's like on medication? When would be a good time for them to...
That medications affect almost all tests, you know, in some way or another. So that's like a 7-episode topic that we're not going to cover today.
Hey, well, we picked up a new podcast
new topic. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that can happen there. And we've talked about those in a lot of other episodes, but, when you take these tests, what you're looking to see is where is my body operating while I'm on this medication. And then if you understand what the medication can do, then you could dig deeper into that. But that's probably too much to get into for this topic. We do know if you're on a blood pressure lowering medication, then you know that that medication is probably lowering your blood pressure.
Probably.
It's probably what's going on with that. So if you look, if you're on that med and your blood pressure is 120 over 80, you know that's not the real blood pressure.
If you're on antidepressants or something like that, it's raising. Yeah, well, most of them are raising medication.
And that's a lesser known thing. You may be really depressed and on meds for it and check your blood pressure. And like, oh, my blood pressure's fine. But then you got to realize, like, well, it's the med that's probably pushing it up to fine.
Right. A lot of those meds restrict a person's ability to pee out their salts and minerals, and then the minerals raise up, and then they're not so depressed. And if you want to understand that better, we have a whole depression episode where we get into that. But, okay, so that's a good indication that it's too low. And there's a lot of, what are the main issues that can come from low blood pressure that most people see?
Spaciness, depression, anxiety, cravings, weak digestion, insomnia.
Low energy.
Immune system breakdowns, too, because you'll be, like, depleted of calcium.
Well, that's a kind of a side topic, I guess, but sure. Yeah. That could be it.
Cross-eyed.
Yeah. Constipation is typical, because they're usually short on stomach acid. So then all the symptoms that go along with low stomach acid, like burping, bloating, acid reflux, heartburn.
Right, so those are the main things that someone might experience with those things, or dizziness even. That's a really good one, too.
Yeah.
So what's a number where blood pressure is leaning too high, and what do we see with that?
I forget the exact number we use. Was it 143 or 145?
Maybe it's
on that 140. Sheet right there.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. Over 130 is when it starts to go high. But I usually don't get too concerned until someone hits, you know, 140, unless there's reason to have concern for some other thing.
Yeah. And it's important to know, like, those numbers change a lot throughout the day. Like, if you just got home from a jog or something like that, or a stressful conversation on the phone or whatever, you want to know, like, how your body chemistry is shifting around so you can get a good baseline, or at least, like, adjust your thinking around, like, say you're dealing with low blood pressure and you just get off a horrible phone call with your boyfriend, breaks up with you, you check your blood pressure, and it's good all of a sudden.
You're like, I need to always fight with my boyfriend.
Right?
You break up every day.
To get in control of your health, you have to, like, be willing to, like, learn the spectrum of things that are influencing you and impacting your body chemistry, and then and that will help you get a better baseline for are you making real progress or not.
Right. But it's just a huge measurement that most people should know. You know, if you're over 30 or if you have any major health issue, then that's a pretty important thing just to at least get a glimpse of what's going on. And could, you know, what I like to see is somebody look at, you know, a few self-tests And if one number is just insane, like it's way out of place, then it's a pretty good indication that, hey, that may have something to do with some things that are going wrong, and why don't I look into fixing that?
Yeah, and usually it's like when you correct that one thing that's way out, it normally resolves like a lot of issues that you may be having. It's kind of like when I would do work as a posture therapist, when you see one thing that's like their head's like on their shoulder or something like that. If you could just correct that misalignment, it makes a world of difference for like pain everywhere in their system.
Right. So, and blood pressure is a reflection of the minerals in our system, like the salts, sugars, and the protein a little bit too, as well as filth. That just hasn't been able to be washed out. Filth is what
filth.
I say.
It's junk.
Phil. Phil's in our Phil Collins.
Yeah, it's an indication of what Phil is doing at his house.
So,
a lot of people will see high blood pressure, and a lot of times it's because their blood sugar is so high. So, because
Phil's there.
Yeah, because Phil makes your blood pressure high. So that's a good thing to know, is blood pressure. Mm-hmm. So I think the next most important thing is blood sugar. And I think every household should have a glucometer, just because you can gain a lot of information, not only avoid becoming a type 2 diabetic if your sugars are out of control and you don't even know it, but also if any member of your household becomes insane for no reason – and they're just a miserable person to be around, you know, once every 3 weeks or something, then it's nice to look at blood. Just like when they're insane, then say, can I check your blood sugar real quick? Right. And you can see, has it crashed far too low for this person to function as a human being? Because a lot of times that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, so if they're screaming, you just stab them and get some of their blood.
And then say, hold still so I can check it.
Speaking of which, like there's videos of how to do all these different self-tests, like in our free digestive issues course at kickingthenuts.com/courses, and also on my website, mybodyofknowledge.net. If you just type self-tests into the search box, you'll find it. So if you're wanting to do these tests, there's videos that show you how to do it and even links to where you can get the equipment.
Right. But when you're looking at blood sugar, it's valuable to look in the middle of the day if you're having some type of symptom like that, like a dizzy situation, I'm depressed, bipolar type behavior. But the gold star of what to look at is the fasting glucose, which means you check it first thing in the morning. And if you want to do this, you know, set it out like in the bathroom or something, like where you'll see it first thing in the morning, you'll forget. And you want to check that number first thing in the morning. And what kind of numbers do you like to see from a fasting glucose?
Typically right around in between 80 and 100, would you say that's a healthy range?
Yeah, and I'm fine with going a little below 80. Anywhere between, you know, 70 and 90 is what I really like to see. Mm-hmm. Once people get over 95, then I know that they're having a little harder time processing sugars and such. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the range you want to see. And the first thing in the morning is because that's what we've always tested. So we know that's a number that we want to be consistent, that we know a range that's good.
Yeah. And this is a great test to do, especially if you're dealing with stuff like you're a type 2 diabetic and you're working on trying to like fix that whole issue and become less, if you are insulin dependent. This is a number you can see change like overnight. Like when you change your diet, you can wake up and all of a sudden, like you test it the first day and your blood pressure is like, your blood sugars are only 200, 300. And then you look at it the next day after like eating in a way that lowers your glucose levels and it'll be like in a normal range. Like all of a sudden, it's not like 12 weeks later you come back and hopefully it's a little better. It's like overnight.
Yeah, so it can be drastic, but that doesn't mean that if you're a type 2 diabetic, you're going to fix it the next day. Just know that the changes can be very drastic relatively quickly once you start doing the right stuff.
Change is going to come.
And you're still going to have symptoms and like the insulin resistance, but you'll know really quickly you're on the right path. You're
doing right, and that's an important piece of information. And for you to be able to actually see that happen, because 99.99999999 percent of all type 2 diabetics that have talked to me or come to me. When I asked them, so what did your doctor say about food? They say, oh, he didn't mention food.
Really?
So most people, even the people that are dealing with this issue, don't have the base understanding that, oh, if I eat carbohydrates, that turns to sugar in my blood and raises the sugar level in my blood. Mm. Like, that is not even taught to people. So if you can understand that and then you have a glucometer and you can kind of look at this, then you can see, oh, you know, you can food journal and see what you ate and then see what your fasting glucose is the next day. And it kind of gives you an understanding of, oh, when I have 7 bananas in one day, my glucose is a little higher than the day when I did not have any bananas.
Right. And along with that, cholesterol will be tend to be higher in individuals that elevated blood sugar levels. So if that's another thing that can contribute further to the high blood pressure. And now they are teaching that in medical schools. Who knows how long it'll be until doctors start actually telling their patients mm-hmm. that is another thing.
Right. If you get a whippersnapper doctor, you get a lot of new information. But
yeah, that might care about people still.
But so go to younger doctors. Yeah.
That, I mean, they're coming out with the newer information. So, and but who knows? Like, they may still be mandated to say pharmaceutical information. But there is a strong proven correlation between elevated blood sugar levels and elevated cholesterol levels. So and we've talked about that in a whole podcast episode about high cholesterol, so we don't have to talk about that here.
But it is true because, I mean, I don't know how long ago it was, but several years ago when I was about 90-something pounds heavier, I was at a doctor's office, never mentioned anything about my weight or that I should lose weight or anything. But when I was in high school and I weighed about 130 pounds, I was at the diet doctor's and he told me I was fat because he wanted to sell me some Fen-Phen,
right.
You know, and it was like, oh, I'm fat now. And, you know, and then like I'm 100 pounds heavier than that, more than that, actually. And then I'm not fat because you couldn't really prescribe me anything because that was when they were doing all the lawsuits on Fen-Phen and Phentermine and stuff saying it was bad. So I guess they had stopped prescribing that.
Interesting.
So the glucose is a really big deal. But another one that is not a self-test, but is a really big deal, is insulin levels.
Mm.
And it's really great to get at least an indication of where insulin levels might be, because your blood sugar can be fine, but the insulin levels are very high because you need more insulin to keep those blood sugars fine. So something that's really cool that they're doing a lot now is that a person can go to a lab, just like they would go the same lab even that their doctor might send them to for blood work. They can order a test online without their doctor, and it's not to diagnose or treat anything. It's just for educational purposes. But a person can order a cholesterol test by themselves. They don't need a doctor to do that. There's a website that I use a lot called Health Check USA. I'm not an affiliate there or anything.
They're our sponsor for the show.
Yeah, they're not, but that's just one site. There's probably like 15 or 20 different ones that that use a lot of these same labs that your doctor would use. So you buy the test, and a lot of them are anywhere from like $60 to $200 or $300, depending on what you want to test. And you can test like, you know, thyroid hormones. You can test iron levels, hemochromatosis stuff, cholesterol, all this stuff. And so you take in the form that you bought it, and they run the test, and then they send you the results. Now, they don't send you an interpretation of this means this, or you have this, or you got to fix this. They just send you the results, and then you kind of do your own research, which is not always the best idea, but if you have a base understanding of what the situation is, then you can look at some numbers and get your own information.
Yeah. Some other ones are Any Lab Test Now, and SpectraCell is another one. There's usually like blood draw centers, or some companies will even send someone to your house and just collect a blood sample in a, you know, totally like legitimate AMA certified way, and send off the frozen sample to the lab, and then you get your results.
Right. And so cholesterol is a great thing for a person to look at if they've never looked at that, or it's been a long time, because a lot of times blood sugar can be in good range, and then you go and get your cholesterol level, and the cholesterol is very high. And that high cholesterol is often, not always, but often a great indication that insulin levels are too high. And that high insulin is creating inflammation, which is causing cholesterol levels to go high to deal with that inflammation.
There are gadgets, too. You can get one, like a home test.
Yeah.
Like, there's an electronic blood lipid profile thing that'll tell you your total cholesterol, your HDL, and then it'll infer your LDL also from some equations that if you're really like scared and you have high blood pressure or high cholesterol and you want to like really track it on a more regular basis than the doctor's insurance will allow, you can get one of those devices. I think they're in between like $100 to $200 and then you can test it anytime.
And it seems that all those devices are not only getting better, but cheaper.
Yeah.
And so that's really good. Right. Yeah. So we're probably not far along from a lot of those things being an iPhone app.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're kind of working on some things like that now.
I had my cholesterol checked, so I think I want to do that for
There is that. They even go to the Apple store. You can get a blood pressure monitor cuff you just wear.
Right.
Really?
It's 24-hour sequence. Like
I should.
It streams your blood pressure to your doctor or your own phone, so it just tracks it all day long.
That would be great to know all day long, because Kenna could show that to her boyfriend.
You could just have it on your app.
My boyfriend, he's my husband.
Don't talk to her, and it just like shows where she is so you can dodge her.
Right.
Red zones.
Exactly. Maybe I'm picking those fights just to raise my blood pressure subconsciously.
Yeah.
So those are some big ones, and we'll cover a couple more too. But let's go into a few questions now, since we've been ignoring people the whole show.
Okay, and just so you know, today all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com.
Audible.com.
Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for the details. All right. And you can get one of Tony's books there too, and then that also tells you how to self-test and
Kick Your Fat in the Nuts teaches you how to do the self-test that we're talking about too.
Yeah. All right, so Fred from North Hollywood, California. At what number would you consider blood pressure to be high? Over 130.
Good job.
Good job, Kenna.
Yeah, what about diastolic?
Y'all didn't say that one, actually.
Oh, 90.
Over 90.
130 over 90. Okay, Fred. There you go. You're easy.
Right.
You're easy. Cover girl.
Red.
All right. Val, what are good diabetic numbers, high and low? We covered that one, huh?
Kind of. Well, so when we talk about diabetic, we're talking about type 2 diabetes, because that's the one that's the easiest to manipulate and to correct issues and stuff like that. So type 1 diabetes is a totally different issue. But if your fasting blood sugar is over 100, then you're what they used to call syndrome X, or now they might be starting to call you towards insulin resistance or pre-diabetic. And different doctors have different numbers. It kind of varies between 100 to 110 to 116. And even the numbers that they start to diagnose people as a type 2 diabetic, I've heard variations in that too. But most doctors run at 128, to where if a person has a fasting blood sugar of 128 3 days out of a week, that they're like, okay, you win. You're type 2 diabetic. you get the prize.
Yeah.
So that's about the number that you really want to stay far away from.
And there's also the A1C test you can run yourself, which it's a new thing that you can do that at home as well. You can get that pretty much at any Rite Aid or CVS or online. But the A1C test tells you your sort of average blood sugar over the past 2 to 3 months, which is the fasting glucose is like right now, what is your blood sugar? And the A1C test is like, what has it typically been on average over the past 2 to 3 months? So there's different scales of like what ideal is on that. Do you have a favorite number?
It seems like 5 to 5.4 was like a normal number. Yeah. And then above that was you're starting to lean not so great.
Yeah.
I'm going by memory here.
Yeah.
Another thing is that this is kind of a new thing where it was almost like as soon as it came out, they were like, this is the new gold standard. This is the law. This is the best thing ever. And now they're kind of starting to see some things where like, oh, maybe this is not as solid as we were thinking, but I still view it as a valid test. Mm-hmm. But I would still do a fasting blood sugar with that. That's a bigger piece of information too.
And that A1C score, because it is an average of over the past 2-3 months, will change more slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So you can watch your glucose day to day and stay in like ideal range for that. And then maybe like once a month, if you're working on fixing that number, you do the A1C test again.
Yeah, I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah.
All right. Tom, why do I wake up totally exhausted and just sleep all day and night? Ambien.
Yeah. So this is a situation where there's not an answer for Tom right now. There's no way we're going to have an answer because energy production, being tired, inability to wake up, the need to sleep all the time. There's like 50 different reasons that those things happen. And there could be variations between all of them.
Yeah.
So what Tom needs to do is to listen to this episode of our show.
Right.
If you haven't heard this episode of our show, I want you to listen to this episode of our show.
Yeah.
And didn't we do something with like being exhausted or tired
all
the time?
Chronic fatigue syndrome.
But just to kind of flesh out what you were just saying there, like, if a client were to ask me that question, I'd be like, well, what are your self-test scores? Because it's so ambiguous right now. Like, he could be low blood pressure. He could be too catabolic. He could be too anabolic. He could be a slow oxidizer. He could be hypoglycemic fast oxidizer. He could be too alkaline. Like, all of those things could make you feel like that. And it could be really clear which one or ones of those were the case for Tom in the moment if he just ran a self-test.
Right, so this is something for Tom to be really excited about because most people don't know. They know to go to the doctor, and then the doctor does blood work. So the doctor gets the blood work back, and he says, everything's in range. I can't do anything for you. So the reason that happens is because blood is a compensated fluid where the body does whatever it can to keep it in line. And a lot of times by the time blood numbers go out of range, everything's really screwed up real bad.
Yeah.
But what's exciting for Tom is that he can look at other aspects of his physiology just at home. And when you start to understand what they mean, then you can get ideas. Because Tom probably hasn't been dealing with this for 2 or 3 nights. This is probably something he's been annoyed with for a long time. And what's exciting is that this is what this is all about. This is about just learn how to look at your own body and get some ideas of what's going on. And then you can start to make steps to improve them.
Yeah.
Without that information, you kind of got nothing to do, though.
Right. And what's exciting also about these self-tests is it's not like they're like second tier, not quite as important as blood tests kind of tests. Like these, because of what you may all like flesh out a little bit more about what you just said, blood is a compensated fluid, meaning your body makes a huge priority about keeping the ranges of different parameters in your blood balanced, or else you die. Like your blood pH, your blood sugar.
The goal is not to die for your body.
Right.
It really doesn't want to do that.
Whereas your piss can be all over the place.
Like
your piss pH, your urine. Sorry. it can be 8, it could be 5. You know, which is a huge difference in pH. But your blood, if it goes from like 7.36 to 7.46, like it's getting close to that.
Almost dead.
You know, right?
Almost dead.
So that's what I mean. It's a compensative. It means your body is doing all sorts of amazing, crazy, different things to keep your blood in the narrow range that allows life. But your urine and saliva, therefore, are like very telling fluids because in looking at them, you can see like what your body's having to do to keep your blood balanced. And because of that, like we often think of urine and saliva tests as like more informative than blood. And you can test your urine and saliva anytime. You can test your blood too, but those tests are oftentimes tests that like doctors don't even think about.
Right. And what's great is that, this Tom is a perfect example here. So, you know, he could test some things and they would be in range and they would be perfect. Like he could probably test his blood sugar. It might be perfect. He might be able to test his pHs and they would be perfect. And then he would test his blood pressure and it would be like 80 over 50.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have somewhere to start from. Then you can understand, okay, it appears that my minerals are very low. My resources are very low. And that may be affecting my ability to function and not be tired. So if that's the information that's way out of whack, then you just got some information.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Cool.
Good job, Tom.
Annie, If your numbers are all good, in a good range, should you stop supplementing with BeatFlow and Betaine HCL or cut back and monitor? Not sure how long to continue with these supplements.
So, Annie's probably a book reader that where we teach people if they have digestive issues, they can fix them by improving bile flow with a product called BeatFlow that has like beet greens in it. And they can improve their stomach acid with HCL. So there's not a lot of numbers that show a direct correlation of how those are working specifically. With those, it's more about have my digestive symptoms gone away? Am I pooping every day? Am I no longer bloated or burping or passing gas or having indigestion or acid reflux or all those things? So once somebody starts to feel like they're functioning, they can kind of start to back off of those. And then how do you have people back off of stuff like
that? Yeah, just like they ramp up with like the HCL slowly, you want to try to ramp down, like wean off of them as well. So say you're at 5 HCL and everything's awesome.
Per meal, right.
Yeah, you're taking 5 HCL capsules every meal and everything's great, your numbers are great, your digestion's good. Then you're like, I'm going to try to start tapering down, because the better your digestion's working and more balanced your chemistry is, the better your whole digestive system works, so you'll be less needy of supplementation. So you start to taper down, and say the next day you go down to 4 capsules HCL, and everything's still groovy, it's still awesome, there's no problems. Then you go down to 3, still great, no problems. You get down to 2, and then all of a sudden you're a little constipated. Like, so you like you were having 2 good bowel moods, and then all of a sudden you only have 1, and you felt a little bloated. You'd be like, oh, maybe I still need to take 3 for a little while. So you go back up to 3, and then everything's groovy again. And then, like, another week or two or a month later, you'd start tapering down again.
See if it works.
Down to 2, and then until you're just in the clear, smooth sailing. And then I like to keep those supplements around just in case you feel like some sort of regression. Like, you have, like, a huge party weekend or you have some birthday meal and you eat some weird food and you get constipated or gassy again. It's nice to have those digestive supplements to help you, like, supercharge or get back on track. But basically, you got to learn to identify what are the signs and symptoms of insufficient HCL and also of impaired bile flow, and then just know, like, if you need a little boost, you can increase your dose or go back on the supplements for a little while until things get smooth again.
And that's another thing we wanted people to learn in this episode, especially if you've never heard any of our shows, and if you haven't, we're not even sure why you haven't turned it off yet. but a big self-test is, oh, I poop once a week. You know, if you're that constipated, that you don't need to check your blood pressure to know that there's a problem. There's a problem. So just symptoms from digestive issues are a big piece of information that can kind of guide you in the right direction. And we teach all this in the free 4-week digestion course. But if somebody's having an issue like that, it's just as good as information as if you see that your blood pressure is low or high. So understanding symptoms can be a great way, because most people that have digestive symptoms think that that's just how it is for me. I'm just, you know, my mom was the same way, so that's how I am. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand that chronic constipation or diarrhea or bloating, they don't understand that there's really something causing that people fix very easily all the time.
Yeah, it's something you said. I don't know if it was a while back in a podcast or if it was something that I was, you know, transcribing. But, you know, I always give you all a hard time about digestion. But you said something about it's like a plant with its root system. Mm-hmm. And if the, you know, how long is the plant going to survive if the roots aren't getting water and what it needs and nutrients? It's going to die.
Yeah.
And that's basically what our digestion is to our body. And it made me go, okay, I guess I can, you know, start really paying attention to that. Because it didn't seem so important, but it is. It's everything, basically, and it creates disease and all kinds of problems in your body.
Yeah,
so for Annie, one number that you would want to look at when you're considering how are you doing with your digestion is your blood pressure. And if it's still too low, that can be a strong indication that you may not be pulling enough minerals out of your food yet. And if it's still too high, that can sometimes be an indication that bile is not flowing well yet, and you're not removing filth from the body, and the filth is accumulating in the blood and raising the blood pressure.
Can we talk about urine dipstick from this one?
Yeah, dipstick.
So it's my favorite self-test because it's so fancy. It's
got right.
The 11
parameter urine analysis reagent It's a super long name, but if you look at it, looking for it on Amazon or Natural Reference, it's under R for Rapid Response 11 Parameter Urinalysis Dipstick, I think is the name of it. So it'll tell you the presence of like 11 different things and how much of those are in your urine, including, in to address this in conjunction with Annie's question about beet flow, if you have really impaired bile flow for a while, you'll start to see either bilirubin or urobilogen in your urine dipstick.
On that dipstick, yeah.
Yeah, so that is a very, very strong indication that your bile is not flowing out of the body and it's refluxing back into the blood, and your kidneys are starting to pee some of it out. So that's a big problem. And you can tell that if you look at your urine dipstick. Either of those things are a good indication that, hey, that's not happening. And another thing you can see there sometimes is protein in your urine, which it should not be there also, which is usually a sign that the body is very catabolic. And that is often a case because of lack of protein assimilation. Like you're not digesting and eating enough protein and assimilating it. That's not the only thing that can cause a catabolic imbalance, but it's a good sign that like there's something off in your digestion or you're not eating.
You can tell if you have a UTI.
You can tell if you have a UTI. You can also tell from your urine specific gravity, which is also on that test, if your body's leaning too anabolic or too catabolic. And if it's 15 is like an ideal score for the specific gravity, but if it's a little bit higher than that, like 20, 25, 30, that's more of a catabolic, typically slower oxidizer imbalance indicator, where if it's lower than that, it's more of an anabolic fast oxidizer indicator.
Does it tell urine and saliva pH? Well, no. It tells saliva because you don't spit on it, but it doesn't tell your urine or anything?
It has a urine pH marker on there, too, and it has a ketone marker, a few other
just
things.
Use that
all
one.
Those done at once.
Yeah.
Right, so it's really fun. And for those of you who may not know, information about do I have a catabolic or an anabolic imbalance can be very helpful for a lot of issues, and it's basically an issue of at the cellular level, is a person falling apart too much, or are they staying in that rebuild mode too much and causing other problems? But there's a lot of issues that somebody could get a grasp on. You know, why is my anxiety high? Why can't I sleep? Why can't I poop? Why don't my muscles repair? You know, there's a lot of issues that people could get some understanding of if they knew that they had an anabolic or catabolic imbalance. And we teach all that in the free course, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Kendrick from Pelham, New Hampshire. I was wondering, how do I take my wife's temperature? Asking might help.
Yeah, I think you have to ask. Yeah. You have to ask politely. May I please have your temperature?
I kind of
don't understand the question. But one thing is that there's a lot of cool new temperature things out there. Like I use the forehead one,
yeah,
where it's like a little light meter thing that you kind of push the button and you run it across the forehead.
Just like bones.
Yeah, just like bones.
Yeah.
And it tells the temperature.
When you just hold up to the tempo.
Nice.
Right. So there's easy ways. There's all, you know, the old mouth kind of way, and there's other backdoor ways too.
What about under the armpit?
Under the armpit is a different one. I don't know if that's the same reading that you would get from a mouth or a back door?
I doubt it.
I know that people use that for thyroid tests a lot, but body temperature can help give information too. So that's a valid test worth looking at.
Yeah, there's some really interesting things you can tell about your thyroid doing upon waking temperature. It's kind of a little process you got to do that's a little more complicated than this conversation allows. But if you look it up, like temperature thyroid test.
Yeah, it's not my favorite because the variations can be greatly due to weight and stuff like that.
And altitude. And
right, so it's not my favorite, but it's still people have figured out some good things to do with it. But temperature is usually just what device do you have, and it's usually really simple to do.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Danny from Bradford, UK. Is it bad for a hemophiliac to eat too much fish fats due to their natural anti-inflammatory properties?
So, Danny, this is going to be... I don't know.
Hemophiliac, is that where they bleed, free bleeders?
They have trouble clotting.
Yeah, and if they cut themselves, they might bleed.
Right, it can be a real problem. So I do know that a lot of times with hemophiliacs, they'll say stay away from vitamin E and fish oils. And I know that vitamin E has the ability to thin the blood and can lower blood pressure.
Don't take an aspirin.
Yeah, so they would not do that. But I don't know about fish oils. I really don't have a clue. Will, you look like you don't have a clue either.
I don't have a clue. I just know a lot of things that have been said that say that they're super amazing for you, and then some people that I respect the thought pattern of more say that they're awful for you.
Right, and one of those is fish oil. And here, one thing that we can say for sure is that there are some benefits that can come from using fish oils or fatty acids for people that are dealing with very severe imbalances, like an anabolic imbalance, that a fatty acid does have the ability to balance that out a little bit. But a person that's overly catabolic, you give them fish oils and you're ruining them. You're making them fall apart.
Yeah. If you just go to, I would recommend starting the conversation with go to raypeat.com. Yeah. And just look up his article on fish oil, because you'll learn a lot of disturbing things about fatty acids and how, like, I think instead of essential, he calls them, like, fatal or something like that. You know, like, so, but just for people that are curious about that or that are huge fans and that make sure to take all their omega fatty acid oils every day, you might want to read that article and just go over, maybe rethink your pattern.
Right. So just remember that we know that everybody has been telling everyone to take those, but they also used to tell us that smoking was healthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So again, when it comes to fatty acids, we're not saying that everyone must stay away from them, but there's a huge portion of the population that absolutely should, and then there's a lot of other
that absolutely should stay away from them.
Absolutely should stay away from them, and then there's a lot of other opinions that kind of feel like just about everybody should stay away from them or at least limit them.
Yeah.
All right, Richard from Orange Park, Florida.
Oh, and Richard said that last time he was a little too redneck, and so he wants to sound more intelligent, maybe
okay.
British.
Or sorry,
he's actually
Richard.
From
sorry.
Oxford.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Tony, up until I began listening to your podcast, my self-monitoring of health consisted of measuring how far my handles hung over my jeans. Now I am recording my BP and heart rate daily. Once I finish your digestion course, I will follow your recommended self-tests. Having said this, does heart rate indicate being in an anabolic or catabolic state? My resting heart rate is around 50. He sounds smarter
already. He shouldn't be asking me questions. He sounds too smart. I feel like I shouldn't
be doing this podcast.
Right. I shouldn't ask him. So, yeah, this is a great question that I'm glad Richard asked, because, you know, your pulse, your resting pulse, is a big piece of information, and it's a big piece of information that a lot of people have wrong, because you look at an athlete, that pulse will start to go down, the resting pulse, and they'll be like, oh, man, you're... Your pulse is 46. You're really healthy. You're like turbo healthy is what you are. But one thing that we know is that pulse can be an indication of being overly catabolic or overly anabolic. A lot of times when you see tachycardia situations where someone has a racing resting pulse, where all of a sudden their heart rate is super, super fast and they're kind of freaking out. Not in all situations. Shut up. I didn't say that. Not all. But in some situations, those really fast heart rates is from an overly anabolic imbalance where something's causing that person to be far too anabolic and it's causing their heart to race. And for the most part, the medical world is oblivious to this and you just end up with a drug or something. But
they'll say it's like a panic attack or anxiety or something.
Right, and they'll put you actually on like blood pressure meds, even though your blood pressure is like 100 over 80. I had a relative they did this to. But we're not saying this is the cure or anything, but when, and a lot of people in this situation, when you help them improve that anabolic imbalance and they take some steps to correct that, all of a sudden the pulse comes right down back into normal. Mm-hmm. And so the opposite is with a super low pulse, is that a lot of times that person is overly catabolic. And coincidentally, most elite athletes lean a little more catabolic. And, you know, that could be from overtraining, but at the same rate, that catabolic state is where your body can really make energy well. We should all be in a catabolic state during the day. to help us get through the day. So a lot of excellent athletes are a little more catabolic, and they're kind of a little bit better athletes for it.
Oh, I guess I'm never going to be an Olympian.
Oh, man.
Damn.
But one of the factor that does, like, why they would say, like, oh, you're healthier with a lower pulse rate is because when you do especially anaerobic sports like sprints or weightlifting, your heart gets good at pumping more blood per stroke,
right,
which is why your pulse rate goes down, because it's more efficient. Like a very strong rower, like, pulls a lot of water at once, and they can do fewer strokes and go just as fast as the next person. So your heart rate does get slower the stronger the muscle of the heart is, but then there's other biochemical reasons, like you're talking about with anabolic or catabolic issues and pHs, that would augment the rate of pulse.
Right. So when I'm looking at pulse as a, I only look at it as a piece of information. It's not a determinant factor. Mm-hmm. And when we look at most of these measurements, none of them are a determinant factor. You really want to look at a few things and get some indications, and then look at what are the symptoms a person is dealing with, so that you can understand, how does that all fit together? Does it all make sense? And when it makes sense, then you can start working to improve things. So if, like, symptoms are improved, everything's great, but you have one number that's a little bit out of balance, then that just may be how your body has adjusted to functioning better, and that can be okay as long as everything's running well for you.
Mm-hmm. You get one positive on a pregnancy test, and everything changes.
Yeah, that's a big parasite there.
Yeah. Should we talk about some of the other self-tests we haven't mentioned yet?
Sure.
So another easy one that anyone with a timer can do is your breath rate. So ideally, and this says a lot about your metabolism and your blood pH, your ideal breath rate should be right around 15 to 16 breaths per minute just sitting there. Not like when you're running, but like when you're just sitting there. So the way you do this test, you just start a timer and count how many breaths you take in a minute. It's that simple. And if it's much slower than that, that's indications that you either are not really burning through glucose very quickly, like someone who's leaning towards a diabetic state, and you can also be too alkaline. Like if you heard alkaline water was really good for you and you started drinking a ton of it, that can also make your breath rate slower. And the reason it's getting slower really is your body is trying to make energy its best it can, and it can't do that when there's too much oxygen or not enough carbonic acid. And the reason for that is your cells need to oxidize to make energy. They need oxygen in the cells to make energy. And if it's too alkaline, then your cells can't get oxygen from your blood cells into your tissues.
Because the blood holds the oxygen in the bloodstream.
Yeah, because that carbonic acid is required to trigger the blood cells to release oxygen into the tissues. And if there isn't enough carbonic acid because you drank too much alkaline water, or because of metabolic problems you created by eating too many carbohydrates for way too long, like a diabetic that's developed insulin resistance, then there's problems getting fuel or oxygen into the cells, and that ends up creating less carbonic acid for you to exhale. So your breath rate becomes slower, and your body's trying to sequester more of that carbon and keep it in the bloodstream, so you breathe out less often, so your breath rate gets slower.
Right, and this is a really easy one to do. You can even do this test on someone else if they're not really paying attention so much.
Yeah.
And keep in mind that you only want to count the inhales. You're not counting inhale one, exhale two. You just count the inhales. But, like, this is great information for people that are dating, because you go on a first date with someone, and if you notice that their breath rate...
I can just see you on a first date.
If their breath rate...
listening to me.
If their breath rate is like 25 a minute, then that person is crazy. Yeah. And you're going to want to get your check and then go on
check.
To the next person.
Right.
But because they're ripping through fuel so quickly that in most cases, a lot of people with a breath rate that high will have some emotional issues because the brain is not... getting fuel.
I just created a whole funny scene in my head that I'm going to ride up with you on a first date.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, but if I was to go on a dating site now, I would be like, well, does it list blood pressure?
Yeah, my breath.
Yeah, oh, my gosh, yeah.
What's your breath rate?
Yeah, exactly.
But that it is true, like, for people that are really interested in, like, optimizing their mental performance and emotional stability and energy production, This is like one of the main numbers that you'd want to look at. And one of the first books you'd want to read is called Nutrition in Your Mind by George Watson, where you learn like how all this sort of matters. And also you'll learn some of the more sciencey stuff about how breath rate is affected by these different factors. But you'll come to know like it has a profound effect on your mood and your memory and your mental performance and your ability to make energy. So your ability to be an athlete or work out or burn fat. So breath rate is super huge. And also if you're one of these people that are really anxious all the time, like you definitely look at your breath rate as one of the main measurements that you want to check and see. Like, because for example, if you're way too alkaline and your breath rate's really slow, you may feel tense and panicky all the time.
Right.
Like, you may like your tailbone will be tight all the time and you're just like really hot and you feel like you got to hold your breath all the time and you're anxious. And it's because your cells are suffocating. Like they're not able to get oxygen, even though you're in a world of oxygen, like the cells can't get them when you're too alkaline. So your breath rate would show that if it's really slow.
So let's talk about pH quickly too. We only have a couple minutes left, but you know, with pHs, there's a lot of information that you can get, but what we don't want you to do is try and get the piece of information that everybody out there is telling people to do. And that is that they're telling people that you need to alkalize and you're acidic and you're going to die and alkalize. And they're selling these supplements that force your urine to go alkaline and can cause a lot of problems, according to what Will was just saying. Do you want to just kind of breeze over that?
Just that both of us totally messed up.
Yeah, we fell for that many years ago.
I was alkalizing for a long time and ended up creating extreme tetany, which is like clenching, cramping in my extremities, like hands and feet all the time, as well as like gum bleeding and like protein malnutrition, like blue circles under my eyes. And it's because I alkalized away all my stomach acid, so I had no protein left, and my cells were suffocating for energy because the bloodstream was too alkaline. So that's not fun.
And it's not what you want to do, but there's still a lot more information that you can get from urine and saliva pH that is not, am I alkaline enough? That's not the information we want you to get, but there's a lot of other info that you can get.
Yeah. Don't think that higher urine pH is better. But there, I guess since we're close to out of time, we should also mention testing ketones. So you can, on that 11-parameter urine analysis reagent dipstick thing that I mentioned before, you can also look for ketones. But you can also, with more sensitive ketone test strips, you can get in the diabetic section of any Rite Aid or CVS. If you're trying to lose fat, we've had a couple of different podcast episodes on the ketogenic diet, and monitoring your urine ketones is a really useful way to know if you're successfully achieving ketosis or not. And as I talk about in this blog post I wrote on it on mybodyofknowledge.net, just type in ketogenic in the search box, you'll see links to other ways to monitor your urine your ketones. Because once your body gets good at making ketones and using them for energy, your urine ketone levels will go down, but your breath and blood ketone levels will go up. So there's ways, there's self-tests you can order from like Amazon.com or wherever to monitor your blood ketones, or there's a really fancy breath ketone meter by Ketonix, K-E-T-O-N-I-X.com, which I love. It's a super fun toy when I'm like in fat burning mode to like just check your breath ketone levels and be like, oh, awesome, I'm super burning fat right now or not.
Right, and we've also been talking a lot about using a ketogenic diet for some therapeutic effects for people that are dealing with some issues.
I don't understand why you and Will are doing it, because y'all aren't fat at all. I mean, like, they should have, like, 4% body fat. So.
Well, kind of as we talked about in the ketogenic episode, that's kind of how I've always eaten, is more ketogenic, and I just feel better, I function better.
It just
works better for me. But that doesn't mean that everybody needs to do it. But what I just like to mention the fact that it's not just for extreme weight loss, that there's a lot of therapeutic effects, that it's almost the only thing that'll work. Like, you know, 80 years ago, it was the only thing they used for seizure patients. It
still works.
Was a ketogenic diet, and that still works. And so they're seeing a lot of
resistance. Does it help with that?
Yeah, and they've seen a lot of success with like PCOS and even MS and stuff like that. So it's so interesting because of that people are using it so much for therapeutic effects now, not just weight loss.
Yeah, I mean, I use it mostly so that I can have energy and think clearly all day. Like you just don't have hypohyperglycemic issues, your brain's just always clean and clear, and there's way less free radical production when you're running off of ketones. So your brain stays clear longer, and you also have less mental degeneration when you get older, like lower instance of dementia and things like that.
Mm. So we covered a lot of very easy things that you can do at home with stuff that you can get at most pharmacies and health food stores or on Amazon. I think the 11 parameter strips is the only thing you can't get at a local store. You got to get those on Amazon in most cases. But we also talked about how to check websites where you can get more advanced tests if that's what you want to do. But I think the main point is to understand that, oh, I can learn about my body on my own. Mm-hmm. I can gain more information without having to go into the doctor to do that. And if you can start to learn about what that information means, you can kind of adjust your situation all year round to whatever comes up, really.
You can also get a lot of help with tracking all this, which we haven't even mentioned this yet, on the Coalition for Health Education website.
Yes, ourcoalition.org. You can register as a – you click on register as a self-help person. And there's charts in there where you can – because when you get the visual of what your numbers are doing and you can kind of watch the progress and, oh, I ate this and it does this kind of thing – it really becomes great information.
Yeah, and there's also a fancy app you can get so you can easily track and monitor your progress charts. Once you become a member on the Coalition website, you can just download it on your Android or iPhone. Just search for the Coalition for Health Education mobile app on either platform. And do we have the ability for them to find coaches remotely?
Yeah, you can request a thing.
So if making sense of all
Kenna
this.
Kenna runs a lot of that. She helps people find
good
people
job,
that are local.
Kenna. So if you're overwhelmed by like, I'm interested in doing these self-tests, but I feel overwhelmed in trying to interpret them. If you sign up on the Coalition, it's only like $20 a year, I think.
It's something that we built for practitioners to use with their clients. Uh-huh. But we ended up seeing from the book readers that, hey, I want to monitor my stuff, So we just left the same $20 annual fee to be the member.
You do journals. You do everything there.
Yeah.
So
it's a great support team. If you want to do this, like, there's stuff that shows you how to do all these self-tests, but then there's that platform where there you can get a coach to help you make sense of it and also have a platform to track everything on these nice progress charts.
You can read about your imbalances, and they'll give you recipes, too.
It's pretty rad.
And pretty soon we're going to have the ability for you guys to become coaches and learn, take the coach course and learn how to do that stuff, too.
Rad.
Oh, yeah.
That's super fun.
Yeah.
So anything else that we need to wrap up with? We told people how to do self-tests, and I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's – I mean, maybe a quick recap on the equipment you might want to get would be a blood pressure cuff, urine and saliva pH test strips, which is the same. You use the same pH.
Yeah, and those are like $15. Those are easy.
The rapid response 11-parameter urinalysis dipsticks, ketone test meters if you want to test those sensitively.
Glucometer.
Like glucometer for blood sugar. And then any special lab tests you want to run, you could do probably through any labtestnow.com or SpectraCell or healthcheck.com.
HealthcheckUSA.com.
As Tony says this in his book and a lot of stuff too. Like if you're thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to buy $50 this and this and this and this, that it's like you're going to pay for your health now or you're going to pay for it later. You're going to prevent some huge disastrous disease if you start monitoring stuff, or you're going to be paying for it out the nose when you're limbs are falling off.
Well, the real money-saving situation is to avoid what I did and Will probably did too, and that is you start to research this problem you're having, and somebody says, oh, well, glutamine helps that. Mm. And then somebody else says, oh, well, put butter on the bottom side of a Pop-Tart, not on the frosted side, and then sit it on the roof in the sun for 4 hours.
That one.
So you just kind of start trying all these things, and like 80% of them are pushing you the wrong direction. So you're wasting all this money on super expensive supplements that are just making you worse. Mm-hmm. But if you spend money on things that you can look at what your physiology is doing, then all of a sudden you get information that points you in the right direction. And then it kind of tells you what you need to use.
Yeah. And you could honestly get all of that equipment I just mentioned for like under $100.
Right.
Or if you want the fancy like breath ketone meter too, there'd be like $200 total. And that's not like an ongoing, you have to keep rebuying that stuff. Some of the things like the test strips, you like you run out of, but your blood pressure cuff will last you. I bought one 4 years ago. It still works.
Yeah. So it's good. And then like if you have friends come over and they're just a jerk, then you can start testing numbers on them and see why.
Yeah.
So it's just good to have in the house.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody always looks at me like that. Am I really a jerk?
No, awesome. We love Kenna.
Yeah, we just want you to wrap it up.
Oh, okay. Okay. Is paranoia one of those signs?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So today's show is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And if you want to learn more about how to look at your own body chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. Join us on Facebook and tell us what you want to hear about.
Yeah, and we'll see you next week for the Clowns episode.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.